Good morning again and welcome to Riverside. My name's Keith, I'm one of the leaders around this place, and this morning we're actually continuing in two sermon series. We're wrapping up our Luke sermon series, and we're overlapping that with a new series we're calling Resurrection Life. This is week 76 in Luke. My son asked me this morning, how much more Luke do we have? Next week, we're done with Luke. It's been 77 weeks next week. It's been awesome. But this series, Resurrection Life, we're in week two now. We're kind of overlapping them. And in this series, we're looking at the amazing implications and realities that the resurrection of Jesus Christ has for us. And last week on Easter Sunday, I walked us through some solid reasons why we believe that the resurrection of Jesus is actual, historical fact. It really happened. We actually believe that Jesus Christ, a person from 2,000 years ago, God in the flesh, rose from death, that it happened. And last week, I gave some solid reasons, some solid evidences why we believe that. And so this morning now, I want to talk about why it matters. I mean, it's pretty cool a guy 2,000 years ago rose from the dead, but why does it matter to me sitting here 2,000 years later in South Bend, Indiana? And to answer that question, we're going to be looking at an account from the first Easter Sunday from the Gospel of Luke. This account does not come at the beginning of the day. This account actually comes at the end of the first Easter day. As we look at this encounter with two folks that they had with the resurrected Jesus, we're going to learn a lot about hope. A lot about hope. You see, for the folks in this account from Luke, hope seems to come a little bit late. Hope came late to them. And maybe for you, maybe you've come here today discouraged. Maybe your life hasn't gone the way you had hoped it would go. Maybe you were hoping you'd be married by now, but you're still single. Maybe you're hoping your marriage will be strong, but the fact is, it's unraveling. Maybe it's falling apart. Maybe you're hoping your job would take off, but you're stuck. Or maybe even worse, you're out of work. Maybe it's an unexpected illness. You've had great health for so many years, but recently, not so much. Or maybe you're hoping for another Easter season with a loved one, but you're here this Easter season. They were here last year, but they're not here today, and there's a huge hole in your life because of that. And maybe you're here today with less hope than you used to have. Maybe the hope in your life has been challenged. And to that, I want to say I'm glad you're here. You've come to the right place this morning, because today we're going to read the words of Jesus to two very discouraged disciples that were down and who had lost, really had lost all hope. This passage is found in Luke chapter 24. Have your Bible open up there. Starting in verse 13, here's what we read. Now that same day, okay, this is the first Easter Sunday. Now that same day, the context is the first Easter Sunday, the day that Jesus rose from the dead. Now that same day, two of them were going to the village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They're walking 7 miles from Jerusalem to Emmaus. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened, the crazy weekend that had just unfolded with the crucifixion of Jesus. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself walked up alongside them, but they were kept from recognizing him. It's a very interesting story. There's these two members of this very tiny little community of people who are following Jesus, a tiny group of folks who are following Jesus. Two of them are from it. And we're going to find out one moment, one of them is named Cleopas. Now in the Gospel of John, John 19:25, we read that one of the women at the cross was named Mary, and she was the wife of Clopas. And she saw Jesus crucified. Most scholars say that Cleopas and Clopas are likely the same person. One's his Greek name and one's his Hebrew name. Okay? In other words, it's likely that there's this couple on this road to Emmaus. It's Cleopas or Clopas and his wife Mary, who witnessed the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And they're trying to come to grasp with what happened. They've been following Jesus. They had hoped in Jesus. They put all of their stock in Jesus. But Mary saw him die. Jesus died. It's over. And so they're wandering around because their hope, their world has been shattered. And as they're walking away from Jerusalem, where everything had happened, they're walking away from Jerusalem, a stranger walks up alongside them. And the Bible has this intriguing phrase, but they were kept from recognizing him. Just picture this. This is a fun thing to picture. So Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, walks up alongside these two followers that have scattered, but they don't recognize him. And by the way, as I read this, I find it interesting who Jesus, as he resurrected, who he showed himself to, you know? If I were Jesus and I just rose from the dead, you know who I'd show up to? Caesar. Hey, Caesar, you think you're God? Check this out. Or I show up to Pilate, the Roman governor of the region. Hey, Pilate, you kind of sent me to death. Guess who's back? Remember me? But Jesus does not do that. We saw last week he showed up to Mary Magdalene, a woman who in many ways was an outcast in the society. And now he's appearing to two scattered, depressed followers. It's interesting. Jesus seems to go out of his way to show up to ordinary people, to people who are often forgotten by others. And then verse 17, he asks them, what are you discussing as you walked along? He's walking alongside them. They don't know who he is. He says, so what's going on, guys? What are you talking about? And this question is hilarious. It stops them in their tracks. They go, they stood still, their faces downcast. They've lost hope. And one of them, named Cleopas, says, are you dense? Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have just happened? I mean, he's not trying to be polite, right? He's like, who are you? How did you not hear about this? You see, Cleopas is overwhelmed by the death of Jesus. And he says, hey, guy walking with us, who are you? Have you been living under a rock? Do you not pay attention at all? And of course, at this point, Jesus, the stranger who's for some reason shrouded to them, he could have gotten off a nice zinger, right? Well, actually, yes, I've heard of him. It's me. But he doesn't do that. He says this. What things are you talking about? Verse 19. Tell me what things you are talking about. And they tell him, well, you haven't heard about this? Oh, it's Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet. We saw him do amazing things. He was powerful in word. He did amazing deeds before God and for all the people. The chief priest, the religious people, the rulers that were handed him over to be sentenced to death. And they killed him. But we had hoped. Past tense. We had hoped he was the one. We had hoped he was the one. But they crucified him. They crucified him, but we had hoped he was the one that was going to redeem Israel, redeems God's people. We had hoped. You see, they're telling their story here, aren't they? They're telling their story of what they had hoped for. And those are some moving words, right? We had hoped. We had hope. But now, not so much hope. And for you and I, if you live long enough, that's probably your story as well, right? We've been hoping we'd raise a great family and live a long life together, but the doctor says the cancer's really bad. I've been hoping, I had this great dream of this great job, but I feel like a failure now. I've been hoping I could break free from this destructive sin in my life, but it's back, and I can't seem to shake its grip on me. I've been hoping we make this life together, but then she told me she doesn't love me anymore. We've been hoping, but then our kid ran down a road we never thought he would run down. Oh, we've been hoping. We've been hoping there was this God of the universe that would redeem, the Savior who would make our story come out okay, but now he's dead. He died on a cross. Our story's gone all wrong. Oh, it's what we had hoped in. And friends, this speaks to me so much because the story of Cleopas and his wife, their story, it relates so much to my story. And I'm sure it relates to your story. You see, in their story, they are part of a special people called Israel that had a destiny, had a calling. They are part of this people group that were to live for more than just themselves. And they were to serve and to follow this amazing God. They would be his representatives to the nations here on earth to bring hope to the world. Their story is a story of hope in a living God. But their story seems to go wrong. Their country, their people, Israel, they're suffering. And they've been suffering for a long period of time. They were exiled in Egypt where they were slaves. They escaped, but then their history is filled with oppressor after oppressor. Syria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome, and they're searching, they're hoping for a redeemer to come one day. One day their hope is a redeemer would come to fulfill this longing to be redeemed, to be rescued from all this oppression, from all this brokenness. Then according to verse 19, Jesus came along and he was seen as this powerful prophet, powerful in his words and powerful in his deeds. He said things that no one else had ever said, and he did things no one else had ever done, and they thought, this is it. This is it. Maybe he's the one we've been hoping for to lead a revolution, to throw over our oppressors and to throw over off our enemies and to make our people prosperous again, to make our people great again. You see, they had all these things, all these hopes, and Jesus seemed to be fulfilling all of their hopes. But then all of a sudden, things went south. And Jesus, who they put their hope in, he ends up dying on a cross. The thing they put their hope in, the person they put their hope in, died. And not just died, but died on a cross. And whatever they thought they'd been hoping for, they figured it can't be found in Jesus anymore. You see, crucifixion is the way the Romans killed people to demoralize them. They killed the rebels this way. Crucifixion was the brutal way that Rome would say, we win, you lose, it's on display, everyone can see it, you have lost, we win. See the person hanging on the cross? Dead, gone, goner, we win, they lose. In response to that, Cleopas and his wife, they don't know what to do, but they leave Jerusalem, they walk away. And then Cleopas continues, and what's more, it's the third day since it's all taken place. In addition, we've heard some of this stuff from the women that have amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning. They didn't find his body, though. They came and told us that they had seen visions of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb, and they found it just as the women had said. They did not see Jesus. So their hopes are crushed, and they say, but even on today, there's these strange things we're hearing. There's this news of these women that say the body wasn't there. They talk to an angel or something. Everything's going crazy. Everything's happening in Jerusalem. But we're going home. We're going home. We're no more of that. They're walking away. Then the stranger says to them, verse 25, he said to them, how foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Now, this doesn't sound very polite on Jesus' end, you know. These two are pouring out their heart to them. They don't realize it's him, but they're pouring out their heart. And Jesus basically says, hello, you dim bulbs. I mean, like, hello. That's basically what he says. Now, he's not trying to insult them. He's trying to open their eyes. You see, they had put their hope in a rescuer that would liberate them in a very specific way. They had an idea of what their Messiah, what their Redeemer would look like, and Jesus did not fulfill that. For a while, he did. They got their hopes up, and the cross happened. They realized their story of hope wasn't the way they had thought about it. This happens to all of us too, doesn't it? You think things are going one way, then in one quick moment, it goes completely south. You're living in a story that seems to be going well, but then something happens, and you find yourself walking down a road you never thought you'd be on. That's what happens to these two walking from Jerusalem. They had their story. They had their story of Jesus, but then things seem to go wrong, and they end walking down the road away from Jerusalem, distraught and lost and losing hope. But then the stranger says to them, you don't get it. You don't get it. You don't have the full story yet. The story ends up really, really good. Verse 25, he says to them, how foolish you are and how slow you are to believe. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things to enter into his glory? And then, by the way, this would be the best Bible study to ever attend, I think, in the history of the world. Beginning with Moses, the first five books of the Bible. And all the prophets, he explained to them what had been said in all of the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures, concerning himself. Wouldn't you have loved to have been there for that? I mean, that would be a cool Bible study. Jesus basically says, let me tell you this story a little bit differently. You've got the story wrong. And he goes on to tell them the story of the Bible, specifically the Old Testament. Yes, a story filled with joy, but let's be honest, lots of terrible suffering in the Old Testament. A lot of pain, a lot of death, a lot of confusion. And Jesus shows them that joy will come. Joy is still possible in this broken world, but it comes out of suffering. Joy lives in the middle of suffering. At the heart of this true story is a suffering God who takes the weight and the brokenness of this wounded world upon himself. That's the story of the Bible. And what Jesus does is he sits them down and he walks them through the scriptures and he shows them the overarching story that the world is suffering, that the world has rebelled, that the world has lost hope. But there's this God of love, this God of hope, this suffering God. And he shows them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. It's amazing. It's amazing. See, when Jesus first showed up, the people thought he's going to bring a great army and a great vindication through wealth and power and secure borders and restored vast empire. That's the story they're looking for. Of course, that's the story most of our world tries to find today, doesn't it? It's so much the story of today. When you have it all, when you make it to the top, when you succeed, that will make your story complete and you can have it all. But that never really happened for God's people. From the beginning, they're quickly moved from slaves. They get free, but then there's internal strife. Then they're suffering in exile. And then nations rule over them. Again, Assyrians, Babylonians, Persians, Greece, Rome. God's people expect this great story. They expect a great life, their best life now, this great story. But instead, they experience great suffering. Tremendous suffering. Jesus shows up. Their hopes get up. He might be the one. He might be the one who brings political deliverance of their oppression and suffering. But then Jesus suffers greatly on a cross. And his death messes up their story. It messes up their story. But then, this is important. The stranger says, but what if? What if the depth of suffering confirms the story? What if the depth of struggle confirms the story instead of disproving it? What if the crucifixion isn't Rome's defeat? But what if it's actually God's defeat of evil and of sin and of guilt? And he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter into his glory? In other words, what if all of human history boils down to one man suffering, the Messiah, then coming into glory when the tomb is empty? And imagine these two, they're walking down the road. They're going a little bit crazy. Things are stirring in them as this stranger is explaining things to them. They're listening as they walk, and then they remember the things back home in Jerusalem that have been happening, and the strangers had this amazing Bible study with them. They get to the end of the road, and they say this. As they approach the village to which they were going, and Jesus continued on as if he were going to walk further. They're stopping. He's like, see you later. Peace. But verse 29, they strongly urge him, stay with us. Stay with us. It's nearly evening. Remember, it's Easter. So it's Resurrection Sunday. So they've been traveling all day, 7 to 8 miles in the hills. It's nearly evening. The day's almost over. So he goes and stays with them. Sir, it's evening. Come, eat with us. Stay with us. Verse 30. When he was at the table with them, he took bread. He gave thanks. He broke it and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. Interesting. And they asked each other, oh, were our hearts not burning within us when he was walking with us on the road and when he opened the scriptures? Were our hearts not burning? Were you not feeling it? It was Jesus. It happened when he broke the bread. Maybe they saw the scars the nails had made. But it happened in brokenness. He breaks the bread with his hands and their eyes are open and they recognize him. Their eyes are open. I would have loved to have been there for that moment. Can you imagine it? They can see. They now have the good sight. They can see the whole story of suffering. It's not just that Jesus, God, suffers. said also in Jesus our God triumphs. He triumphed over sin. He triumphs over guilt. He triumphs over failure. He triumphs over confusion. He triumphs over regret. He triumphs over problems. He triumphs over death. Said for you, whatever road you're walking down, whatever darkness you're facing, whatever regret you might be carrying, whatever confusion, whatever things you've lost hope in, defeat does not get the last word. Sin does not get the last word. Death does not get the last word, because the same Jesus that was crucified by Rome did not stay crucified. He was raised by God in the greatest act, in the greatest power of human history. He rose from death. And that's what they saw in that moment, in that encounter with the resurrected Jesus. Their lives are changed. It changes their story. It restores their hope. It happened 2,000 years ago for this too, and friends, it's still happening today if you let it. It's interesting, their eyes were open reminds me of something else in the Bible. Chapter 3 of Genesis. Very beginning, there's another couple. Another couple with a story of hope. Adam and Eve. And somehow sin gets all folded up into their story. One day they disobey God. They decide to live apart from God, without God. And they decide to reject God and his ways and his plans. And they did this by eating this forbidden fruit. And when they did, there's this very interesting phrase back in Genesis. This is when they ate the fruit, their eyes were opened. That's a horrible opening of your eyes, right? That's a horrible opening. The opening to see the possibility of sin and darkness and experience envy and greed and hatred and oppression and injustice and apathy and hoarding and guilt and shame and death. And they can now see heartbreaking things. Their eyes are open to see the heartbreak of the world. They have to leave the garden, life away from God. And that's also our story, generation after generation, century after century. This is the human condition. Until one day a stranger came, lived among us, died for us, and conquered death for us. And then another couple, wandering down the road, they receive food, different kind of food. Genesis 3, food opens up their eyes to all this brokenness. This couple in Luke 24, walking down, they receive food, broken from the hands of a crucified Messiah, who's now risen from the death. And the same phrase gets used. Then their eyes were open. Food from Jesus. And their eyes were open. I don't think there could be a better phrase to be said for anyone. Right? My neighbor who doesn't know Jesus, their eyes were open. The Muslims in the UAE, their eyes would be open. I can't imagine a better thing to be said about anyone, right? And because of that, they get really excited. Their eyes are opened. And they realize he's risen indeed. And I love this verse 33. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. Do you remember how far they've already walked? 7 miles. Right? This is a hilly country. I just got back from Israel. It's hilly country outside Jerusalem. They get up and return at once. What time of day is this? It's evening, right? They've already settled down. It's evening. So It's nighttime. They've walked 8 miles away from Jerusalem. They lost hope. They meet the resurrected Jesus. They go, we got to go back. It's like 9 o'clock at night. We're going now. They're going now. The hope they had put the person they put their hope in had been crucified. They walked 7 miles away. They count the resurrected Jesus. It changes everything. They have a new story now, a new revelation, a restoration of hope. It's too amazing just to sit there and do nothing. They can't just sit there and do nothing. They have a new story. They have a new and wonderful story. So they get right back up, and they walk 7 miles back in the hills to Jerusalem. They returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it's true! I love it. It's true. The Lord is risen. He's appeared to Simon. And then the two, they told what had happened on the way. And now Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. You see, they found the story It's true. And they entered in the story, and they embraced the story. It's true. The Lord has risen. He's risen indeed. And now that's their story. That's the story they're telling people. They're not telling people the story of a dead Messiah. They're telling people about a risen Messiah and a real hope that lasts. Friends, I don't know all the ins and outs of your story. I know some of your stories, but I don't know all the ins and outs. But I do know this. If you live long enough, you'll end up disappointed. If you live long enough, you'll lose hope at times. If you live long enough, you'll suffer in ways you did not see coming. And at times you will find yourself thinking, where is God? Where? And whose story is this? I did not sign up for this story. I've been hoping, but now I'm hurt. I'm so anxious. I feel so alone. I feel so bad. I gave into the same sin again. They rejected me again. The cancer's returned. I've lost hope. And friends, you got to pick what story you're going to live in, though. Our world's going to tell you. Our world's got a couple competing stories, if you will. One of them says, go with the success story. If you're successful, get a lot of money, get a lot of power, get some health and prestige and status. Live in that story. That's the story to put your hope in. The problem is if you live long enough, you realize it's a farce. And one day they bury your attractive, successful, wealthy corpse in the ground. And what do you do then with the American success story? Right? Not a lot of hope in that. Other people in our day will tell you there is no story. There is no real meaning. We're all just here by accident. You're around a little bit and then you're gone and that's about it. The problem with that is what do you do with hope? And what do you do with meaning? And where do you find morality? What do you do with love? Love's got to be more than just random carbons interacting with each other. What do you do with suffering? Because there seems to be a lot more than just random carbon atoms floating around. That's the story I used to live in. I used to be an atheist and believe that we're all just random, but what a terrible story. It's also terribly scientifically, too. There's a lot of scientific reasons to say that's a bogus story. But for 2,000 years, there's been this other story, this true story, and it's still unfolding today. For me, it unfolded on June 20th, 1996, when this stranger came alongside me. He said, I'll give you a different story, Keith. It'll have a better ending. And my eyes were opened on June 20th, 1996 to Jesus. And for 2,000 years now, he's been doing this same thing for people around the world, and he'll do it for you. Folks, you're not here by accident. You're made and you're loved by a God that cares about you more than you can imagine. Your story and my story gets all messed up. Your story is messed up because our world is messed up, mostly because of this problem of sin. People turning away from God. And we can't fix it ourselves. But then one day the stranger came and he lived and he walked among us and he said things that no one ever said. And he did things that no one ever did. And he went to a cross and he died. It looked like death for anyone else. But it turns out as he was dying on that cross, he was dying for you. He was dying for me. And because he's God, he doesn't stay dead. On the third day, he raises from the grave. Then our living Savior, he comes alongside this couple walking down the road and he restores their hope. He restores their hope. He restores their hope. And just like he did 2,000 years ago to this couple, Cleopas and his wife Mary, he's still doing it today, friends, saying, let me tell you another story. It's better than the American success story. It's better than the atheistic worldview story. It's better than just nice moralism. It's even better than packaged Christianity. It's the story of a God that loves you, pursues you, and can restore your hope. Friends, I don't know how your story is going. Maybe it's going really well. That's an awesome thing. I'm glad it's going well. Others, maybe not. Maybe you know Jesus, but you don't feel like there's a happy ending right now. It's interesting. This couple on the road, they knew Jesus. They had known Jesus, but they're walking away from the cross. They're walking away from Jerusalem. They're putting distance between them and the cross. Distance between them and the point of suffering. But friends, when the story is confusing, when the story is discouraging, the last thing you should do is run from the cross and from God. Instead, just run to God. Press more into his story. And I love that even if this couple's walking away, Jesus does not give up. He joins them. He pursues them. He draws them out. And friends, maybe your story has taken turns you thought it would never take. I mean, think about your story. If you walked with Jesus for a couple decades, maybe. Maybe it's taken turns you never thought. Your heart's broken more than you thought it'd be. You're having to carry things you thought you'd never have to carry. You've gone down some road you thought you'd never have to go down. And friends, even this morning, there's this guy named Jesus walking alongside you, inviting you into a new story, a story of forgiveness and of grace and of hope and of courage. An invitation for you and I to be part of a story where we walk by faith, we live in love, we will die in grace, and one day we'll be raised up forever with God. And friends, if you want that to be your story, it can be your story. You just tell him now, as folks have done for 2,000 years, God, I wanna walk down your road. I want you to be my friend and you to be my Lord. I want to live in your love and live in your hope. So at this point, I'm going to pray. They're going to respond to this invitation of Jesus, this invitation to join his story. It's interesting, when these two folks were walking down the road, it said their eyes were open 2,000 years ago when they broke the bread. They return to Jerusalem when he breaks the bread. And what I love about communion, we celebrate it every week at Riverside, is communion is remember that. The time that Jesus broke the bread. He gave it to his disciples and said, this is my body. It's being broken for you. This is the linchpin of the story. My broken body for you. At the end of the dinner, he took a cup and said, this is the cup of my blood shed for you. It's the blood of the new covenant. Drink this in remembrance of me. It's a sentimental, it's a pinnacle thing for us. And then along the road, 3 days later, he does it again, right? He restores hope by breaking bread and sharing among his disciples. And so this morning, we're going to break bread together. There's 5 stations up front and 2 in the back with wafers of crackers and cups of grape juice. Remember the body broken for us, his blood shed for us. And I encourage you guys, some of you have been walking with Jesus for 20 years, but your eyes are closed. Some of you have walked with Jesus for a year and you've already lost hope. I'm praying this morning your eyes are reopened. I'm praying this morning that you will see the gospel with clarity. I'm praying this morning that you'll have hope restored because of the life and the death and the resurrection of our living Lord. Would you stand? Let's pray. Jesus, we are amazed by you, God. By your love and by your grace, by your mercy. By your victory, by your conquering of the grave. You are alive, you have risen indeed, and we declare that this morning. We can't go to your grave, you're not there, your body's not there, and so we have these elements to remember you by that will come to the table this morning. Open our eyes. Open our eyes. God, let this not be religious actions. Let this not be something we do every week. Let this be an awakening of your spirit, an awakening of your gospel, an awakening of our hope in you. Holy Spirit, have your way.